welcome to I Want More Comics Podcast, episode 33.
Podcast.
I'm Richie.
Sean.
Zach.
Don't you ever
podcast
interrupt my intro again, sir. How dare you?
I was doing the Flavor Flav.
Oh, okay, okay.
I was being your
hype man. I like that. Let's keep that up.
Yeah.
Welcome. Well, you know. So, we're back again. We're so far so good on content. However, we are still rushing. We have one of our hosts is going to try to leave early.
Yes, he has a show to go to.
He may not make it through the entire podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to go see Louis C.K.
Louis C.K., sweet.
I'm leaving.
I'm actually kind of jealous about that. That's going to be fun.
So. You're jealous about everything in my life, Richie?
That's not true. Not everything. You had a birthday.
I know. I did. It was amazing. I didn't do anything. Answer. I stayed home.
Stayed home. It's awesome.
The birthday was the bomb.
The bomb, diggity. Well, that with all that, I guess we'll just get started with our news item.
Yeah, so the news item that I wanted to bring up.
We do one item now. Where were you when you did this? You.
He's been here.
I don't pay attention to you guys.
He just lost it. I swear.
Like ever.
I know. So the one thing I wanted to bring up that is kind of a big industry news that just came out, and I wanted to talk about it, see what everybody's opinions were, but that in the new solicitations for DC Comics, they announced that their monthly titles are going to change to $3.99 instead of $2.99. Included with that will be a digital code. So that you can put it on Comixology or maybe they'll have their own app. They haven't done that totally yet, but maybe they will, like Marvel does. The most popular books like Batman, Detective Action, Superman, Justice League, they're still going to be $2.99 shipping twice a month.
Right.
So there are people who love this, there are people that hate this, and I'm just curious what people.
So I don't know if I would love it, but I don't hate it. I think that when it comes to cost and demand and, you know, it's just when it comes out monthly, I understand that there's a longer wait period for that. And we talked about it when they launched Rebirth and how I was worried about, yeah, they're giving it at $2.99, but they're also giving us content for, you know, every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So really you're talking $6 versus the $3 you would spend during the month anyway.
Yeah.
And I was worried about the content they would give, like lower the page count or add more advertisements. And DC didn't do that. They actually gave you 2 full comics in a month for $2.99.
Yes.
So when they say, hey, we're going to raise it $1 and give you the digital download for it.
Yeah.
At a monthly rate.
How much do you actually use those digital downloads?
I was gonna say the same
thing. Well, see,
this is the naysay part for me. I'll be the naysayer.
That's because, that's why Marvel is...
I honestly never use them.
Right.
Never.
So, one, that's why Marvel is...
I have so many of Marvel's, and I've never used them.
That's why Marvel has recently announced that they're going to stop doing those.
Uh-huh. I thought they were going to start back up and do them as some rando comic. Or something inside
which
of it.
I thought would
I heard
be cooler.
Something weird
but
like that.
But the problem
that.
Is that for people like me, that is the only way that I imbibe my Marvel comics. I put them on my iPad. I put my Marvels in a box. And how I read...
Oh, you actually use them then?
I don't read the floppies
That's
of Marvels.
That's fascinating.
At all. Ever.
I definitely do not.
Yeah,
I've been reading them, and I always thought that they were actually rando comics.
No, it was
and
the
then
comic
I was like,
you were
oh,
getting.
Oh, it's the one I'm reading right now.
Yeah.
But I heard somebody was talking to me, another customer, I think, brought it up to me that Marvel was looking at doing where they would still have a code, but it wouldn't be for the comic you bought necessarily. It would be for a completely different comic to try to cross-pollinate to get
I
you into other
idea.
Stuff.
I think that's great.
And that would be
that's
cool.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that is.
Yeah, well,
listen to us, Marvel.
The full solicitations for everything, the full solicitations for everything haven't officially dropped and are announced yet.
Right.
So this is just some of the pre-stuff that we're supposed to be getting next week when we get our new previews, and we're going to get more of this concrete down. But DC did release a statement saying that they were going to be doing that. But yeah, so it's going to be really weird for me when it comes to the Marvels. And in fact, when DC did do digital, I always bought the digital copies and I put them on my iPad and I read them and reread them on there.
Huh.
See, I just never... So, I don't like the digital format at all. I hate it. So I just never read it.
Get off my lawn!
So...
Kinda. I mean, it's... I mean, not to be like the old man or whatever, but I just... I don't... I like the tactile touch of the comic book. And if I'm going to read a comic book, I want to experience it in all of its full glory of holding the comic book.
I like the tactile touch. Turning,
I know. Turning the page, you know, looking at each picture. But when you have it on a phone or an iPad or a computer.
Well, I don't like it on a phone.
It takes away. I mean, they prompt you by, you know, bringing you to the next panel and all that kind of stuff. And that's fine. And if that's how you get your content, hey, more power to you.
Well, it's just, I turn
this
that off.
For me personally, it's not for me.
Well, see, and for me, I never have time or the resources to have a light, have a chair, and sit with a box of comics. I have to read stuff on the go. I have to go, hey, I have my iPad here, and I'm laying in bed, and I get 5-10 minutes before whatever, and that's how I read a lot of my Marvel stuff.
Yeah, but you got to take time.
So.
It is a new... I was going to say the same thing. I think both are right here, because I agree with the fact that I barely have time to read my comics, let alone re-download them all and then read them. But in the same breath, it would be nice to live in the new age of, you know, everything on your little tablet. And
yeah.
I have read a few comics on tablet. It doesn't bother me. I think it's unique because you can watch TV, flip right over to your comic, you know, and it's all right there. And that's regardless of where you're at, the DMV or at your house in the comfort of your home, your comic's there and your real comic is sitting.
Exactly. Pristine, and that's why I like
damaged.
I don't like to get just a digital comic.
Right.
Because it freaks me out that I can't see it. And sometimes I do take something out and I look at the covers or
we're in the collection business and digital comic is not a collectible.
It's not collectible. And I do still like collecting comics. I like having a run of Spider-Man or, you know, Daredevil or whatever it is. I like going, oh, look, those are my 15 Daredevil issues.
Right.
But I also have them on my iPad.
Right.
And if I want to, which is really cool, if I read an issue and I go, oh, I don't remember this, I'll just re-download issue 3 that they talked about and read it right there.
Right.
I don't need to gear up my box and find it and do that stuff. So so I do like owning the digital, but I like owning the comic too.
And I rarely ever reread stuff, so that could lend to me not wanting digital too as well.
I always thought when they introduced digital that what would happen is more digital sales would arrive, but physical copies of that story would be more expensive and limited, creating the collection drive even further.
Sure.
And then we could all at least read the story. Because I always thought it was interesting, you know, you have a number one detective and you can't read it because it's too, you know, it's too expensive. And then now I have a digital copy. At least I can read it and say, this is what's in this plaque. It's this story here.
Yeah.
It's the origins of something.
Sure.
So
we'll see what happens with DC.
A slippery slope.
I don't think
we attack with the pitchforks yet.
I don't think so. And
get off my lawn.
I don't think so. And that was one of the things that I was worried about when I heard about this.
Right.
Was, you know, we have a lot of people. We keep bringing it up every week when we talk about our DC Rebirth stuff. That we have tons of people that just buy Rebirth or buy more DC than they ever have in years.
Right.
And my big worry was, I buy 15 DC books a month because all of them are $2.99, and now this way I can only get 6.
Right.
And that, you know,
and that's a real risk. But these are titles that are once a month and titles that aren't necessarily followed by everyone. So if there's only going to be a limited print of those copies, there's a potential that those copies themselves can give you a better buyback value in the later years. So
yeah.
It's all fair to me. It doesn't seem like they're trying to penny pinch or push an agenda that doesn't fit to the comic book reader, which they've stayed true since the start.
Yep.
So moving from there, let's go on to Picks of the Week. And I think we'll start with Zach.
Excellent. All right. So I picked for my Pick of the Week, The Chronicles of a Galactic Emperor.
You showed me this comic, and it's French?
Is
it a French... illustrator, or
This is going to be from France. The big thing with this, the thing that caught my eye, is that the artist on this is the artist who's doing the most recent Metabarons, which if anybody has checked out Jodorowsky's Dune,
right?
When that Jodorowsky went on to do comics and
did a lot of different comics.
Did a lot of different comics. A
lot of sci-fi stuff that was really well rounded and really fleshed out in the '70s and early '80s. That Titan has been actually reproducing as really nice hardcovers lately.
Humanoids.
Humanoids.
Yeah, Humanoids.
Not Titan, sorry.
Yeah, Humanoids is great. Titan is the one that is doing this book.
That's why.
And and Humanoids is doing the new Metabarons, and Metabarons is his big galactic space opera. That he's been doing. He's done it with all these different creators. There's a beautiful omnibus that you can get that I've talked about before. But the artist on that, on the Metabarons and on this book, is Valentin Secher.
Mm, sure.
I'm not French.
Sorry for all those
And I love this. And I love this. The writer was Louis.
Louis.
Which is awesome. Just the one name. So this is
like
going to be...
I had to tweet this, and I was like, is his name legit Louis? That's it?
It's
like,
Louis, yeah.
Like Madonna or Cher?
So I will say that I bought this comic just on the basis of the art.
Correct.
I saw it, and
I don't see why you wouldn't.
The $3.99 that this is priced at is just worth the art alone. Mm-hmm. And I knew that from Metabarons, easy buy. The cool thing about this is that the way that Titan has it in their solicitations is imagine Khal Drogo and the guy from God of War.
God of War guy.
Yeah, the main God of War guy and Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones mixed together.
Oh my God, had a love baby.
Had a love baby.
Oh wow. And, which one gets pregnant?
And
it's
they
Drago,
are
right. It's Khal Drogo. Yeah.
Drogo. And this character is the leader of the humans on a spaceship, a prison spaceship with aliens and all these kind of things, and they're at war. On this spaceship.
Right.
And
that sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's space opera. It's bloody. This is not for kids. This is rated R. But it's rated R awesome space opera science fiction.
Sing your opera for me.
Oh my.
That should happen.
So for me, that sounds like you have your Gladiator mixed with your BSG and you slam it together. You have all your sci-fi love with all the gritty blood hardcore action style.
Yep.
So that's an interesting taste.
So this is a 4-issue miniseries. I love the Sean was the first one to show me the European and French science fiction scene. Jodorowsky's awesome. They've also done some other things. Even on the back of this comic, there's one coming called Skydoll.
That looks really interesting.
Skydoll's awesome.
Yeah.
There's a collection that you can get that Titan produced that's all of the stuff that... Because Marvel originally brought it over under their Soleil line.
Yeah.
Okay.
They have some
and
cool stuff there.
It was like a... four or five issue miniseries originally, and then it was like three or four one shots. So you get the whole thing in a collected hardcover if you want to read all the prequel stuff. It's really out there, but really cool science fiction
stuff.
Well,
that's the thing about European stuff is that it's out there. It goes for crazy places.
Yeah.
It's cool. Mm-hmm. They don't do comics like we do here in the States, so it's not always monthly.
Right.
Sometimes they'll do yearly. Sometimes it's every year a new hardcover trade of this thing will come out, and that's what they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
So people like this artist on Call and Metabarons, they have so much detail and there's so much art because he spends a year or longer working on this. It's not the grind of monthly comics.
Right.
Excellent. Yeah, if you're looking for some cool science fiction, try and find this.
So it's called Khal, and it's K-H-A-A-L.
Yes, from Titan Comics. You should be able to find this on Comixology if your local store does not carry it.
Right. Which I think I know a local store that does.
Well, that's us. We ordered
it. We had it. I don't know.
We sold
quite a bit. It was selling pretty well. I don't know.
Well, this was one I was telling people. I said, hey, do you like Seven to Eternity?
Right.
That was kind of the thing. I said, it's not the same story.
Mm-hmm.
This is science fiction, not fantasy like Seven to Eternity.
Right.
But the quality of art is there.
Yeah.
So if you just want to look at the art, the thing comparable is Khal.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So I'll go with my pick, and that is Image Comics Moonshine #4.
Solid.
Yeah, it's just been a great story since the beginning. I don't want to give too much away. It's
30s gangsters and bootleggers.
Right. Yeah. So. With a twist on the end of that. And it's, for me, it's been a solid, obviously being a Frank Miller fan, I'm into very noir storytelling. Fade Out was one of my...
Have you read 100 Bullets yet?
No, I have not read 100 Bullets yet.
Oh, come on.
Because you know this is the same creative team.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What? Yes. You really didn't know that?
No, I didn't.
I think you're fired.
This is what, the fifth time I've fired? Dang
it. You're so easy to fire. You just make it so easy. 100 Bullets is
awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, the same creative team as 100 Bullets. 100 Bullets was great.
Yes.
Noir style, or?
You just have to read it. You just have to read it.
I know we talked about it here on the podcast.
It's an excellent crime comic, dude.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
But
it's one of those grand picture things where they only give you small parts of the puzzle, and then it builds to something much larger.
It feels like that's kind of what's the starting of this as well.
Brian Azzarello.
Yeah, Mr. Azzarello. Moonshine for me has been great. Just an excellent story. If you haven't jumped on board, you're not too late. I think you can get in on this before real hardcore twists. They're giving us reasons to like characters, and I think that a lot of things are going to change by the time we get to 10 issues.
That and this cover has a Tommy gun on it.
It does have a Tommy gun on it.
You can't go wrong with a Tommy gun.
I don't think you can go wrong with any of the flavor in this comic, with it being, you know, bootlegging and noir detectives and gangsters and the other element that's really nice. So, for me, I suggest it. It's one of my palate cleansers from reading a lot of the mainstream stuff in grotesque quantities. And then I pick a Moonshine, I'm like, nice.
Sure.
A little bit of a meteor story without having to read 16 issues of something.
It's the savory.
Yeah.
Savory side of comics.
Correct. So if you haven't grabbed it, grab it, pick it up. And that's, I mean,
if you like 100 Bullets, you'll like that.
Correct. Apparently, if you liked 100 Bullets, you'd love this.
Same team.
Yep, same stuff. I mean, same kind
of. Stop failing me, Richie.
I try. There's so many comics I'm reading. All right, so that is the picks of the week this week, so we can slide right into our Spinning the Racks.
Yes.
Spinning the Racks! Da-da-da, 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 da-da-da. Spinning the Racks. And today's topic is something that Zach and I have talked about several times. We did a podcast earlier, and a lot of customers have asked us to kind of break that down. We had to speed through the history of comic books, and we did our best to just talk about every decade since the beginning.
Super fast.
And we just ran through it, just bled through, talked over each other, and did everything we could to get a little piece of everything there. So we're going to break them down into an era segment.
Or a decade.
Or decade
and
segment.
And they're not going to be necessarily chronological.
No. So we're going to start out with, after much debate, 90s. So we're going to talk about the 90s comic industry, comics in general, the pop culture movement, anything that comes to our eyes.
What was going on? We've talked about it before.
Yeah.
We've talked about some of the stuff
in the mid-2000 teens, because it seems to be the same exact thing happening now.
Yeah.
Kind of. I mean,
having lived through both, pretty familiar territory right now.
I mean, that you gotta admit that.
Let's start early in 1990s.
Yeah,
the early,
I'll say,
90s.
The writing's better now.
Well,
that's not hard.
Well, I mean, so you know, if you start from the very beginning in the early 90s, you know, you're gonna have DC just got out of Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yep.
So they're doing their one shared universe. The Justice Society isn't part of another dimension. It is just the past of the DC universe. And Marvel, you're going to have the rise of the superstars. You're going to have the Todd McFarlane's on Spider-Man.
Oh.
You're going to have Jim Lee on X-Men, Will Sportacio on X-Men.
Uh-huh.
You're going to start seeing that, which also
spurred the breakaway to a brand new third large publisher company.
Yeah, which is
tiny company.
Yes,
though,
which Image Comics was one of the biggest things in the 90s, and that was a experiment to show, because at the time, the Todd McFarlane's, the Rob Liefeld's, those kind of things, they said people are buying. This was when comics were selling millions of copies. People were going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the company said, well, that's because it's Spider-Man. We sell 3 million copies of Spider-Man because it's Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd McFarlane said, no, it's because of me. because of how I draw.
And was he wrong?
He was not wrong.
He was not.
This was the beginning of the... This was... the 90s was the beginning of the creator search.
It was the changeover from the corporations holding all the power to the creator starting to hold power.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And when people would go, oh, this is drawn by... That's Tom McFarlane, it's a Spider-Man comic.
It's when you could step out and say, hey, I can do my own. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I mean, people were doing it before that, but in very small, like, numbers, like Bone mm-hmm. was a self-sustaining comic book for a very long time, such as was Cerebus. And, you know, there were certain comics that the creators themselves published them and did everything, but it wasn't a huge, you know, it was one comic. They were producing one comic. They weren't producing a company of comics.
Turtles at the time doing the same?
Yeah, well before that. It was before.
Yeah, that was the 80s.
Turtles was kind of 80s, but I mean...
But it wasn't, it was a very, like the DIY culture didn't kick into full force really until Image.
Yeah.
Like, basically beat the doors down and made it okay.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's you can become mainstream by doing your own publication. Mm-hmm. You can actually do that.
And Image made all those guys, the founders, millionaires. Mm-hmm. And they did that off the base of, on the backs of their own creations.
Right.
Spawn, Youngblood, Wildcats, you know, whatever you want to say that came out in Image. They were hugely popular.
Uh-huh. And I was going to say, like, I don't know how old you were in the 90s.
I was young, but...
At the time for me, that was a time where I was looking at comic books. I didn't really recognize that they were a continuous story at the time, but, like, the imagery that was coming out in the 90s for me, like, is the epitome of what I think back to when I hear a comic book in my head. It's a McFarlane Spider-Man. That's what pops up immediately. You would think it'd be Batman or something.
I get what you're saying.
It's just the way he drew Spider-Man or X-Men.
Well, he was the first one to make the webbing look with those crazy strands going spaghetti. In circular motion.
Yeah. Spaghetti webs is what they called them. Yeah.
He was the first one that really did that.
It was incredible artwork, and it was transcendent of the actual character. And McFarlane recognized that. And I think that the artists behind him, like Jim Lee, was beginning to notice that as well, where their art was moving past the brand and they were becoming their own.
Yes.
And for them to... They were selling so many comics at this point, it was like a rock star atmosphere. They were having midnight parties and doing...
Mm-hmm. When Spawn number 1 came out, even though it sold... Well, how many millions? Like 5 million copies or something?
It was a couple million.
Yeah, some million.
Yeah.
In the 90s, for about a year or two, it was a $200 to $300 book for number one because everyone was buying them. It was super hot. And if you had any copies left in your store, that was everyone wanted
It was the same thing. And it's because it's a weird resurgence now. And the reason why I bring this up, it was the same kind of thing with all the creations that they were doing for Marvel and DC before that. You had like Rob Liefeld doing New Mutants.
Sure. Yep.
Look at New Mutants 87, first Cable, right?
Yep.
I remember seeing it on the wall in like 94. And they wanted $100 for the thing. And I was just like, that is ridiculous.
What in the world?
At the time. You know, but I was like 21, 22 or whatever. Yeah. So I was just like, you're kidding me, right?
Right.
This much for that, but really? You know, and I remember seeing it on the wall and just going, holy crap, dude. That's insane. And you look at it now where it tanked for a while.
Yeah, for a while.
But the reason why it jumped up that high is because the character got popular. Uh-huh. And then not only the character, but the creator moved on to Image and got super popular. Yeah, so anything he was touching at the time was just ridiculous.
Gold. Yeah.
I mean, I know we all kind of joke about Liefeld now, but at the time, the guy was, like you said, he was a rock star. Yeah, they had him on interviews on various...
Yeah, you can look it up on YouTube. He's on Dennis Miller.
That was it, Miller.
Talking about Youngblood.
Uh-huh. He was doing MTV commercials. MTV
with Spike Lee.
Yeah.
it's crazy.
Guys are huge.
So the 90s, because we keep talking about this, was the beginning of celebrity in the comic book world.
Which is crazy to me.
That is when the public went crazy for the creators. They went crazy for the comics themselves, for the merchandising.
That was the start of the build of this little show that we all have heard of or possibly been to here at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was the start of that starting to get big.
Yes.
Right.
Because the turnouts were starting to get much larger than they were before because they wanted to go see these superstars. People mm-hmm. wanted to go see them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can hear stories about George R. R. Martin and Neil Gaiman going to Comic-Con and sitting out in a table like you do at a hotel convention and just seeing the 4,000 people that show up that weekend and signing their stuff.
Yeah, and they'd be, half the time they'd be bored just sitting at the table. And now? Oh, no.
You can't get near Neil Gaiman.
This was also the time that people started to realize that comic books were worth money.
Correct.
There was a... I can't remember what the article was, but there was somebody who had written an article at that time. It was early 90s at that time. It was like 90, 91, and I can't remember who came out with the article. I do remember reading the article, like after somebody pointed it out to me, hey, did you read this? But it basically said, hey, don't invest in gold, don't invest in silver, don't invest in stocks, invest in comic books. Comic books are becoming worth money. And it was the first time they pointed out stuff like Action Comics, which at the time was going for like $3,000. It's a little bit more now. But at the time, there was comics that were... People were like, okay, so cool. If I go hunt this down and invest in it, it'll be worth triple the amount. It'll be worth, it's a gold mine. I could buy any of these comics, and they're going to be worth
anything at all.
Yeah. So the speculation market showed up to play in that the comic book field.
And then,
that was the first time they showed up and said, we can get into this. We can make a buck. I can put my kids through college. I can... Right. Buy a car in 10 years with this money. I can do this, that, and, So that was the first time that really started happening.
And also, to coincide with that, was when comic book shops started sprouting up everywhere. Because before then, it was very small, very seldom comic book shops.
It was a little nichey.
Yeah, yeah. And you're like, oh, a big metropolitan area may have two comic book stores, maybe three if you're crazy. Well,
I was just talking to Keith about Xanadu. He's been open since 75.
Yeah.
So, he, 42 years, he's as old as I am.
Wow.
His comic store, he's as old as I am.
Well, is that, what's the name of his comic store?
Xanadu.
Xanadu?
Yeah.
Yeah. But there were comic book stores. There's another article I read a long time ago.
Yeah, it has now.
There was an article I read a long time ago where they broke down the statistics and the comic book retailing field in the 90s between, I think it was like 90 and like 98 is triple what it is now.
Right.
And that all happened during that time, but because it wasn't consistent, most of those shut down. There were places that lasted a year because they showed up, they made thousands of dollars because people would come in and buy tons of comics every day. Every week they would come in and just buy stuff like crazy. And then they wouldn't come back after they figured out that it wasn't worth that much, and they went out of business because they were basing on... And, I mean, we're talking about comic book stores. I'm trying to remember. It was an article in a Wizard or something a long time ago that said that they were ordering minimum 2,000 copies of every Image book that came out.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. And the problem, though, with Image after a while, we're getting late. And then the customers... Well,
they started being late, and the story started... Yep. Like, they all had really good ideas. The original Seven and Image founders had really good ideas to start their stories off with. And they knew how to market themselves, because they would market their titles, and their titles would be next to... Because they figured, okay, if I name this comic book Wildcats, it's going to be, put really close to the X-Men, and they're very similar teams on the shelves, and so on and so forth. So they would name these things very similar.
Darkhawk?
That was one of them. That was the second wave.
Next to Detective.
So they would name these characters these things to market them that way. And when they started off, I mean, the stories were solid for the most part.
Sure,
they were pretty good. They captured your interest, that kind of thing. But then, like Zach said, when they started being late, and then the story started to suffer because they were too busy swimming in their mountains of money or whatever the hell they were doing.
Just doing what...
That's when they still really started taking a hit. So you couldn't order, 2,000 copies or one book anymore.
And the main publishers, Marvel and DC, this was the beginning of the events.
Events and variants.
The events and variants were the big things there. So the quote-unquote beginning events... are Secret Wars and Crisis on Infinite Earths. Those are the arguable first ones. And they did them and said, oh, we sold a lot of stuff. This is pretty cool. We may have to do this again. Then Death of Superman happened.
Yeah.
And that was a huge hit. As Paul Levitt said in an awesome documentary that I've watched many times, said that up until the 90s, reprinting a comic book was unheard of. It was
very rare.
Very rare.
Like
very
a book rare. Like Dark Knight Returns got yeah, right. got yes. a couple printings.
Yes.
Uh-huh. I think one got two or three printings, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But that but was...
for it to go up to a third print, that was just unheard of.
That was crazy. Uh-huh. Them reprinting their entire line of Superman books over and over again to third and fourth printings is crazy.
Right.
So DC saw that. Marvel started doing the X-Men crossovers was when they said, hey, people really like these X-Men crossovers, and every year we do them, they make money. Okay. And they just kept rolling them, breaking Batman's back.
I was going to say, then a little thing called Nightfall happened. Yep.
Turning
Hal Jordan. Robin might have died.
Robin dying. Turning Hal Jordan evil.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just across the board, you can go down. Then that's when the event stuff started happening.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people say, oh, the early 2000s was when the event stuff started happening. No, it's been crossed over for a long time.
Right. And including in that, we also have, so you have a lot of people like, oh, you want art, we'll give you art. But then there's also this, I mean, this is also Vertigo, right? This
yep,
is where Vertigo is our Hellblazer yeah. and our
yeah, the first book was
eight,
it was 1988, so, yep.
And so this is where your guys
Karen
kind of...
came in and said, hey, I think these are...
adult comics for adult readers.
I think these are something people want.
Well, I think that the late 80s kind of... read this very uncensored
they call it the dark age of comics,
right? The dark age, and
where
there
you
was
have
this
your more
pool
adult
of this group
deconstructing yep. heroes and
this group yep. that was like heroes. I'm gonna keep on to that, I'm gonna hold on to that, and that was Vertigo.
Yep.
And those guys just obviously killed it. We've talked about
sure.
it many times
with
Hellblazer and Preacher top
Sandman.
Tier
Sandman
yeah,
Preacher was a mid 90s book.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, all of those were yeah. right around that yep. time.
And this was also the time, like you said, of the dark heroes.
Uh-huh.
This was when Lobo was big, Venom, Wolverine, Punisher.
When I was just out of high school,
sure.
Lobo was awesome.
Sure.
Right. Hey,
our military Christmas is still something I think everybody should read because it's hilarious.
The very first comic book I ever read was part two of the Maximum Carnage crossover in Spider-Man.
Nice.
Which was 1992. Or three, I think it's 1993.
I thought it was three.
And that is Carnage with Doppelganger Spider-Man and Shriek.
Shriek.
I mean, we're talking. But that was what they did. It was a huge expansion into characters, dark characters, the grittiness of it.
Uh-huh.
This is when Punisher really got his foothold onto people.
Yeah,
because he's been around since the 70s.
Right.
He had a little bit of popularity in the 80s, but the 90s was when it really clicked.
Yeah.
Because that's what was going on.
Well, yeah, and that's where a lot of that love comes from. The people that are really looking forward to Deadpool 2 are really 90s readers, because that's Cable, Deadpool, and
Domino.
Wolverine.
Yeah, and they're going to be doing an X-Force movie.
Oh, dude. You know how Deadpool is now?
Yeah.
That's how Wolverine was back in the early 90s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was freaking everywhere.
Right.
You could open any book and he would have a guest appearance there.
You could fall over in a comic store and hit
three.
Well,
and the funniest thing is, what was it? Was it Wolverine Weapon X? Or no? That he was... You remember the issue? So it was an issue where in the very opening pages, you see Wolverine and he goes through the days of the week.
Yeah, it's going to be X-Men... Wolverine 75? The one with Jason Aaron
role?
The one
that follows him through.
Was it? Yeah, because each day it's like, he's with the Avengers, he's doing this.
He has a calendar.
Yeah, and then like Sunday you just see him at the bar drinking. It was hilarious.
It was great.
But that's how he was in the early 90s.
Yeah.
He was everywhere. He was on everybody's team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your book automatically sold more and sold... resold for hire if it had Wolverine on the cover. That's how it used to be.
Wolverine, Venom, Ghost Rider was big during during the 90s.
These are all
the glow in the dark
90s.
Ghost Rider cover.
Yep.
I loved that thing. Even though it was a gimmick cover, and I kind of anti-gimmick covers, that was awesome.
You're like, damn it, you got me on one.
Well, that and if you looked at any of the Spectre comics from the 90s, some of those covers were freaking amazing,
mm-hmm.
dude.
Yeah.
And then they would do stuff, like I said, glow in the dark, where you'd have to take it and you'd see, skulls of people in the background of the actual people and stuff like that. And the chromium or the die cuts.
Yeah, those were huge.
That's when paper quality actually went up as well.
Yep.
That's when the entire industry changed, and they went from just doing newsprint to higher grade paper.
Right.
That's when they started saying, hey, people like these square bounds, people like these one shots, people want this stuff to be reprinted in something called a trade paperback or a hardcover and would like to buy that. That was when that started really becoming more feasible and more of an option.
Uh-huh. This is the time where you accidentally could run into comics at like a Barnes & Noble or a...
Well, 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
King Supers.
Yeah.
That was the spinner rack.
Yeah.
There was still spinner racks then.
Uh-huh. There was still
That's where I got my first comic, was at a spinner rack in King Supers randomly.
Remember as a kid going and buying comics off at King Supers and just grabbing them. Absolutely.
I had Tornado Comics right down the street from my house.
Nice.
So I had the little comic store, and the guy was super cool. I didn't even know comic stores
existed at that time.
I know. My mom would take me to Barnes & Noble and buy
I think this store was like 800 square feet. It was tiny.
That's great.
But he was really super cool. I mean, he's passed since then, but he was a great guy, and that was my coming out of high school, figuring out that I actually liked comics and being a nerd was okay.
I guess I'll accept this in my life. Yeah.
Well, I'd never read anything that I liked a lot until that damn event book that kind of got big.
Gauntlet. Infinity Gauntlet, which is really funny. Most of what they're building towards in the Marvel Universe
right now that you watch in the movie was 90s.
It was 90s stuff. 90s in pop culture is when you're going to see.
Is that where my cartoons come from?
Yes. Come on. That's when you're going to get Batman, the animated series.
X-Men, Spider-Man,
Superman. The beginning, in the late 90s, you're going to get the Justice League cartoon, the beginning of that.
That's Bruce Timm.
Animaniacs.
You're going to get some Animaniacs.
Yes. I mean,
that was my favorite out of all those things you just mentioned.
That does lead in. You know, WB did have the Animaniacs, or it was Tiny Toons that led into, they had a little guy named Bruce Timm that ended up moving into Static Batman.
Shock. Yeah, they were doing all the Fleischer ripoffs. Those Batman cartoons that were doing ripping Batman, off Fleischer Batman from Beyond. Superman. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's a terrible guy, I tell you.
Being ridiculous, man. Just being ridiculous.
And of course, the 90s.
Cartoons, actually,
and of course, the 90s is when we're going to get most of the Batman movies.
Yeah.
You're going to get Batman Returns, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin.
Right.
Batman is 89, so
you get to live at this point at the very peak of Batman merchandising, Batman, promo.
Mm-hmm.
You're at the very top of that Batman branding, is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And then you also get to witness the decimation of that as well.
Sure.
Where people are like,
backlash when you start adding nipples on things, people freak out.
It was the tip in that decade, and then it fell harshly. Where almost people didn't think that another, not only a Batman, but maybe superhero movies in general were just never going to happen again.
Yep. And
because it was that bad.
And the funny thing is that people forget that in 1998 was the movie that really
started it. It dipped our toe in because it was hidden. People didn't recognize
Blade. Blade with Wesley Snipes.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I remember as a kid it coming out and not even realizing that it was.
I thought that was just like taking techno to a new level.
Yes. Great techno scene. I love that techno scene.
Kidding me? I dressed up like those vampires the whole time.
2 years later, you would get X-Men.
Uh-huh.
So I mean, the late 90s was when some of that started to go on the upswing. But like you said, there was time there that...
There's a good 4-year gap where everyone was like, if you put a cape on any... Like, and even at that time, that's how we kind of got back to it, is if you put a cape on it, it was not going to the big screen.
Nope.
It just wasn't going to happen.
Nope. I mean, the 90s is when you're going to get some of the more weird offshoot movies. You're going to get The Mask, which was based on a comic book.
It was so terrible. The comic was awesome, and the movie was just
Jim Carrey did what he could with that. I thought it was
You're going to get
Wasn't Diaz, that was not her first role?
Cameron Diaz.
It might have been her first role.
It was her first role. You're going to get, like, barbed wire.
That was horrible, too.
You're going to get...
Go watch Barbed Wire if you have one thing from this podcast.
Bail out, man.
But what I mean is that offshoot movies.
I'm also going to slide into... Yeah? I'm going to slide into...
Go Ninja,
MTV.
Go Ninja, Go.
Go Ninja, Go. Ooh.
Well, you got AM Flux. You got the Max.
The Max
was excellent, man. That was such a good cartoon.
I remember staying up and watching those cartoons and feeling like, oh, I'm totally
one of my favorite scenes is
watching
when,
this, and this is awesome.
Is when they're at the gas station and the little car full of grandmas pull up, but he looks over again and it's actually the little Izzes with the wigs.
Right,
it was awesome, man. The cartoon was the shit.
It was great. But Eon Flux and all that was during MTV's late hours or whatever.
You have Spawn on HBO,
which that was really good.
We've talked about that. My love for Todd McFarlane.
The movie was pretty terrible, but the cartoon was excellent.
Did the movie happen in 90s?
Yes.
Oh my god.
Movie was 1997.
Yeah.
So
with John Leguizamo?
Yes.
Sure.
He is the best part in that movie because he plays the
Violator.
He played him good, but so basically the 90s in a nutshell is about excess.
Mm-hmm.
Excess in numbers of comics, merchandising.
Well, at the time, Marvel was producing 200% over their initial orders.
So, what that means...
Because they wanted to make sure that everybody could still reorder their issues if they needed them.
Yeah. Break that down. What does that mean?
So, that means that if everybody ordered 1,000 copies,
uh-huh,
if they did 200%, they would do 2,000 copies on top of that, making it 3,000 copies.
3,000 copies.
Okay. That. So now so
there's excess of those issues sitting in a warehouse somewhere.
Oh, yes. God, yes. So now, and I just said 1,000. Yeah. Back in the 90s, we're talking millions.
Right.
There, people would order 1 million copies of Book X.
Right.
They would do 3 million just in case.
Oh, and that's ridiculous. 3 million comics for one title.
You mean 3 million copies?
3 million comic is just incredible to me. Like, trying to process that, my brain doesn't work. Well,
and we've
just
talked
about how many they printed for X-Men.
The
second volume of X-Men number one.
So,
because their numbers are is 8 million.
8 million copies.
Copies. And if Marvel printed 200% of that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, exactly. Now, see, now you're starting to get some of the
and
math.
And there you go. Yeah.
So that was kind of some of the
so access might be an understatement.
Well, they I can't remember who actually put that out there. Who was the editor? Mm-hmm.
He's still the working chief editor today, so
I can't remember who it was. It was
Harris.
Was it Harris? Was it Bob Harris? Okay. I can't, as I say, I couldn't remember who said that. But
it was him and
it was Quesada who decided.
It was Quesada and Palmiotti.
You're insane. We're gonna cut this back to 2%.
It was Quesada and Palmiotti who one of their first things they did, they came in and they said, we're gonna do 2%. Over what you
Well, they did 2%
orders.
And then they had a talk with Stan Lee about not getting paid six figures for doing nothing.
Right.
For having his name out there.
Yeah.
They said,
all through the night, he made six figures to be Stan Lee.
Just to be Stan Lee, because he wasn't
That's
writing.
That's what he did.
He wasn't doing anything. Even part of the company officially.
No, he would sit in on meetings and listen and go, okay, bye.
Yep. He did do a movie called Mallrats in the 90s, and he was a representative of Marvel, just saying.
Well, so what Palmiotti and Quesada did in the late 90s, that's when they did Marvel Knights. Mm-hmm. That was when people forget that in the late 90s.
First they did Marvel Knights.
Well, yeah.
And then he got offered the job to be editor-in-chief.
People forget that in the late 90s, Marvel wasn't going bankrupt. It was days away from being bankrupt. They had filled out paperwork.
Oh, they were ready
to file for bankruptcy to be pieced. The reason why Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, the X-Men are at different places, or they sold off
the rights
to help try.
Because, all the movie studios came in and said, "Well, we're interested in this," you know. And then there was three or four. It was Fox,
Sony,
and there was one other at the time. It was a smaller one.
I'm trying to remember,
but they bought rights for all these characters and said,
on New Line Cinema because they did Blade,
and they said, "Okay, you know," and they were just selling off the rights to their characters because they were trying to rat hole money to save the company, basically.
Yeah. Yes,
because they were ready to just die.
And talk about a success story! Holy crap!
Yeah, and that's why some Marvel comics from the late 90s are worth a lot of money because they were printing even lower than numbers are now.
Right.
So that's why some of that
is the weirdest part.
They're weirdly cut too.
Yes,
notice.
They are.
There's a couple of months where they're not as tall. They're just off by
a little bit. Because I think they were saving costs by like pennies.
Yeah.
So the late 90s there, you had Marvel going on that.
Oh, they took their belts and they tightened the hell out of those.
Yes, they did.
That is the incredible thing about the 90s decade is that at the beginning, it's just like nobody can do anything wrong at all. Yeah. In the middle, people are like, I don't know. And then the end of the 90s is all desolate. It's very, are we going to make it as a medium?
Yes.
Like, do comics survive the millennium? Do we just stop in the 90s and never take it through?
Yep.
I remember that feeling of, like...
Well, and that was the massive backlash against variants, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first massive backlash against, I'm not buying variants anymore because they don't do anything. Mm-hmm. I'll just be sitting on them, and then when I go to try to sell them, I'm going to get a dollar. What the hell do I want to spend 20 bucks on this variant for?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, because like you said, at the beginning of the 90s was when people were recognizing, oh, invest in comics. But then we oversaturate the market, and all of a sudden, the comic you're buying is never going to be worth anything because we have 8 million copies.
Yes.
By 200% of that available.
Exactly. And the reason why Action Comics number one is worth $2 million is because there's only 24 known copies.
There's less than 100, yeah. Right.
That they have cataloged and that people have seen.
The ones that they know about, they have a record of them, and he owns them.
Right.
Yeah. But now, 25 compared to 8 million, you see?
It's, yeah, there's a
reason why
problem.
Action Comics 1 is worth a wreck ton of money.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And that's where I think that in
that's
the 90s...
basic economics of supply and demand.
And Marvel and DC were such in the game of making money that they were like, people are buying no matter what. Screw it. Just give the people what they want.
Dude, I remember when you were talking about Death of Superman, I remember trying to go into my little tiny 800 square foot comic book store to get a copy. I couldn't get in the door. And I'd see people walking out with long boxes full
of Death of Superman.
Of Death of Superman issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they pre-ordered that many.
Yeah, there's a...
And I couldn't get one at the time. I didn't get my first copy of that until we'd opened the store. That's when I got my first copy of Death of Superman.
Wow.
So, and I just kind of have it now, just to have it.
I want to say I got a Warner Brothers store.
But yeah, I mean, you see what I mean, though? Uh-huh. Like,
There's a there's an awesome documentary. I'm just going to do this plug.
Yeah.
That there's a documentary with the Death of Superman Blu-ray called Superman. I think it's called Rebirth, actually, which is pretty funny. Right. And it's all the creators from that time, plus comic book store owners, plus industry professionals talking about how big that was. And it's crazy when you watch that. Just what the creators were treated like rock stars. They were flown to malls and to places to get hours and hours. They said that's like Dan Jurgens and some of those people would stay 8 hours at a mall, and they'd have to close it down with getting people to sign it.
That was how big comics were too. That I wanted to mention was in 94-95 you weren't in a mall unless it had a comic shop in it, you know. And now I can't tell you one mall that has a comic shop.
Or a mall?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
There's a couple. But like, I remember that being a staple of a mall was, you know, your toy shop, your food court, and your comic shop.
Mm-hmm.
And this just ghosted, man.
Yep. Yeah, no. So, yeah. But the funny thing, and we've talked about this recently in the industry, about how a lot of the 90s stuff is coming back.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Because for a while there, 90s was the weird thing that you didn't talk about, the people that have been collecting comics all their lives, even before the 90s, said, oh, we're not going to bring that up or talk about that. Right. But they've done a lot of cool things.
There was a time when Valiant Comics, you could have
Valiant
long boxes of it, and people wouldn't buy it for a quarter of a book.
Yep.
They did not care.
Right.
Yeah, Valiant came out of the 90s, and people were buying that.
That's crazy. Remember an era?
I remember seeing Rye number one on the wall for $40. I remember seeing, you know, Harbinger. Yeah, it was like $80. In my little comic book store, I'm like, there's no way.
No way. No one's buying that ever.
So I missed all of the first wave of Valiant because of that.
Right.
Because all those shot up so fast, I couldn't get a copy. And I was just like, well, I guess I'm not doing that.
Whoops.
Yeah.
So 90s for me, I think it's a great era because that's where I started, you know, so I'll always have a special place in my heart for it.
Yeah, me too.
What was your favorite stories out of the 90s?
Age of Apocalypse was a huge one for me.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
I really, that's probably as far as my favorite story that I liked out of the 90s. If you're talking big books,
really good.
That one was huge for me.
Yeah,
I really liked that one.
Well, mine's easy. I think the Death of Superman was a very good story.
Yeah,
I think that a lot of people give it, like I said, a lot of people put that as the mark of the beginning of the event, and the hey, we're going to be doing every Superman book's going to be tied into this event, which it was.
Yeah.
But at that time, it was a new thing, and I think that as a story, the return of Superman. was a fantastic story. I don't blame the death of Superman like some historians do as the downfall of comics with the event and everyone has to buy these eight copies of
Justice League International that was in that as well?
Yeah, there was, well, it was where America. It was America.
Yeah. Where he beat the hell out of Booster's.
Yep, and he's holding Booster by the head. Yeah, so I love that. But kind of tying into what I was saying, the Hal Jordan thing. Uh-huh. I love that none of the Geoff Johns stuff would have happened.
No.
If they hadn't made
because he was a reader in the 90s.
He was a reader in the 90s. Uh-huh. He was reading Superboy back then, and he said, why can't Superboy be a mixture of Lex Luthor and Superman's DNA? There's an actual letter column in the 90s in one of those Superboy comics. And they said, that's nice, Mr. John Kidd, but, you know, we're not going to go that way. So when he wrote Teen Titans, mm-hmm. he retconned that so that it was. So he definitely is a 90s Rick Remender with Uncanny X-Force.
X-Force is huge.
I know that.
All of that's homage back to that, all the X stuff.
So it's definitely coming back around.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, the young kids that used to read, now they're writing.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Mine is Nightfall, for sure.
Oh, well, sure. I mean, that one's awesome, too.
Kelly Jones' artwork, mm-hmm. for me, it will always be as iconic as anything. Yep. And the stupid antenna ears that
I love them.
I love it. Kelly Jones.
I love crazy gothic looking Batman is awesome.
Bane's an awesome character.
Everybody, anytime you think Bane, I think Kelly Jones Bane. I think Bane. It's fantastic.
Well, and the thing that's so funny is
like your house Bane.
The thing that's so funny.
You do not want to get punched by that Bane.
No.
The thing that's so funny with Bane too is that when he was introduced, he's such a smart character.
I don't want to talk about it. Oh man, did the 90s. Yeah. We get Bane in the 90s.
Yes.
Chuck Dixon creates him. And it's a very smart, very calculated character that actually has a twist at the very end. You know, he's also almost daunting, kind of like they did Kingpin in Daredevil season 1.
Yeah.
And on Netflix. That's how Bane was in Nightfall. He was just this word that kept coming up. And then they punctuate at the end with him.
Sure.
And it's... And he changes the course of Batman forever.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get him in the... And distribute him into the masses through the movies, and he is Ivy's thug that can only say bomb. It's so sad.
It's going to be so okay. Sad. It's going to be okay. But...
Ice to meet you.
Isn't that Schumacher's fault?
That is a Schumacher's, yeah. That is a Schumacher.
What killed the dinosaurs?
The Ice Age.
Oh.
I don't know.
So yeah, I mean, where do you guys rate? I wanted to get... Oh, writers. Any writers?
There are definitely some writers that started in here.
Started writers.
Garth Ennis.
Got his big Mark Waid.
Neil Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman.
But honestly, I will say that the superstars in comics that started first were the artists. In the 90s, it was the artist.
Absolutely.
That people were looking
McFarlane,
for.
Jim Lee, Wells Portacio.
Your Neil Gaiman broke through. Your Neil Gaiman's broke through. Yeah. Where people said, oh, it's a Neil Gaiman book. Your Grant Morrison's.
Lemire or no? Is that Millennium?
Lemire's later.
Lemire's like the 2010s.
Yeah.
So there are some writers that started. You're Mark Waid doing
one of my faves.
Kingdom Come. You got Kurt Busiek doing Marvels. I mean, you're gonna have some of those people.
Alex Ross.
Another huge one. So there's definitely some writers from that time. The big thing with that is going to be your independent guys.
Yeah.
You're going to have your Jeff Smiths. You're going to have your Eastman and Lairds. You're going to have your Todd McFarlane's.
Technically, they're 80s.
But
they do blow up in that time. Yeah.
Because of the cartoon.
There was this funky, weird cartoon.
Yeah. It was my lifeblood. But yeah, so... all right, so I feel like we've really encapsulated the decade. Is there anything you guys want to add more to it?
We could definitely go on for a long time because there's so much that happened in this era. I think that the big thing that I take away from the 90s...
Yeah, your final thought.
...is that there were some good things that happened, there were some bad things that happened, but with all comic books, it gets reused in some better way or some way that nobody thought of. And so I really think that the mood shift has changed. Because when I first got into comics, long time ago, like getting the monthly comics. 90s was kind of a hushed thing.
Yes.
You don't read the 90s, you don't talk about the 90s. Comics are starting to get back to where they were cool, like they were in the 80s. Let's not talk about it. But now it's starting to turn into Uncanny X-Force, one of the best X-Men comics that has been around. Geoff Johns Green Lantern, so many things were pulled from all of history, but also the 90s. Mm-hmm. So the 90s are coming back in a good way when it comes to the stories and to also the independent scene. People love independence. There are people that just absolutely, just, you know, they're huge books. Seven to Eternity, we keep selling out of. It's that book's going to be hot for a long time, and I think Rick Remender and Jerome Pena are going to make a lot of money doing that for a long while.
And that
so.
Doesn't exist without 90s comics.
Yep.
I'd say the independents making the breakthrough that they did didn't exist without Image breaking off.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, Dark Horse did it before, but they never got the same
It was
push.
Not anything like Image, no.
Nope. And Image made it okay to branch out of your Marvel DC world and figure out something else to read.
Right.
So that would be the big takeaway for me.
Yep. And for me, it's the same. The thing I like about the 90s is the learning process from it. For me, it was, you start with access. So here we are, we're in a world where people not only embrace comics, but want to take in as many as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big two make the mistake of going, well, we'll just feed them until they can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
And that almost kills the industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we learn from that.
Yes.
I think that from here on out, when we do see that rush of people caring, we don't just overstep the bounds and break what is the medium in itself, which is collectability and content.
Yes.
You know, outside of just the art, because you and I are art guys, but like, If we pushed art too far and don't give you content,
it's
it fails. If we give you all content and we don't give you any good art, it fails.
Yep.
If you give us too much access and not enough accessibility, either if you give us too much accessibility or not enough, there's a happy medium in
there. Yes, you got it. Yes.
And I think it took the 90s to figure out what that was.
Yep, and the 2000s to perfect it.
Correct. Yep. So for me, the 90s will always be my starting point, and it's not...
Sure.
It will never be a hush. I will always brand out in the...
I don't,
you and me both, yes.
Yeah, I don't talk about it a lot, but I love Carnage.
Right.
And people go, man, he's over the top and wacky. And I go, but I love him.
But I love him. That's Bane for me and his obnoxious Venom style.
Venom, I like Venom as well.
Yeah. So that is it for us this evening.
Yes.
I will pass it off to you, Zach, for hosting next week.
Yes.
Podcast number 34. Thank you guys for listening. And until next time, we'll see you then.
Have a good week. Talk to you later.
Bye, guys.
Tarzan wasn't a ladies' man. He just come along and scoop him up under his arm like that. Quick as a cat in the jungle. But Clark Kent, now there was a real gent. He would not be caught sitting around in no jungle scheme. Dumb as an ape doing nothing. Superman never made any money for saving the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see.